from Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, he created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.
I can't imagine anyone voting against the establishing a commission on the greatest assault since the Civil War on the Capitol. But at any rate, hey guys, I can't for ice cream.
I call upon all nations to do everything they can to stop these terrorist killers.
Thank you.
Now watch this drive.
Okay.
Miss that guy.
Great moment.
Yeah, look at that swing.
It's
a good swing.
Serious political point. Yes, a good swing.
Well, yeah. I mean, you go there to do something, and then people ask you a question. You're kind enough to answer the question. Then you eat your ice cream, or then you watch me to drive.
Good morning.
It's a good swing.
And welcome to Morning Joe. It is Friday, May 28th. It is Friday, everybody.
It's Friday, yay.
With us, we have Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist and associate editor of The Washington Post and MSNBC political analyst Eugene Robinson. White House reporter for the Associated Press, Jonathan Lemire, is with us. And the co-founder of Axios, Mike Allen. Wait for it. How you doing, Mike?
Happy Holiday Friday.
Okay.
Happy Holiday Friday. I tell you what, one thing, though, it was not a happy Thursday yesterday for a couple of Pittsburgh Pirates. Jonathan Lemire, this video has gone viral. It's something to show, actually, any 9-year-old kid to tell them what to do. Two outs. Here you go. You just get the ball. You step on the bag and the inning's over. Okay, now, for those who don't know baseball, if you tag this guy, the inning's over. Doesn't matter if that guy scores or not. The score doesn't count. You just tag the runner, and he's out, because that's the forced play. And yet, Jonathan, it's seriously, this is bad news. Bears break training and go to Pittsburgh. I don't think I've ever seen. I feel so bad for these kids on the Pirates. I can tell you, I've been coaching Jack since he was 9 years old, and my assistant coach Brian and I, we would have gone crazy. We just screamed, "Touch the bag! Touch the bag!" It's like nothing I've ever seen.
Well. There were two outs. This clip was everywhere yesterday. It broke through not just among non-baseball fans, but non-sports fans. There was an hour where it seemed like my Twitter feed was nothing but this video. And the same, Joe, I'm an assistant coach on my son's 9-year-old team. Let me tell you, the Huskies, they'd have gotten out on this play. And credit to Javi Baez, the base runner there for the Cubs. You know, it's creative. It's sort of a burst of inspired madness, really turning around and going backwards. You know, every instinct in baseball is you run to first base. He decides to go backwards. And the Pirate first baseman just had a brain lock and results in a run when he could have prevented it by stepping on the base or tagging him. And now we have a highlight
or low light. Can you freeze this right? Yeah, can you freeze this right here? Can we just freeze the ball right there? So go back just a little bit. So here's the thing. Again, if you don't know baseball, here's the only thing you need to know at baseball. Can you bring it back a couple? Look at this.
Okay.
So this is all you need to know. The guy who is by the plate, he is the third out, right? He is what you call in baseball the force out. Now, this guy right here, he's got the ball. Gene Robinson, if he chose to, he could have just said hi to the guy going past home plate. And he could have sat there and he could have asked Baez, because he was in the base path and Baez couldn't go anywhere. He could just have held the ball. It would have been one of the greatest moments of baseball history where he's holding the ball. He waves to the guy, goes, "Thanks for running. That run's not going to count. But I'm going to talk to Javi right now about Shakespeare." Javi, is it Hamlet? Is it King Lear? I don't know. There's so many to choose from. Do you like his sonnets? And Javi, would like either have to sit there and listen to him talk about Shakespeare or just give up and say, tag me. It's over. Because the only thing that matters is that he just stood there and tagged him right there. Yeah. I don't know, Gene. Please help me. I'm James Brown. I've fallen down on the floor. You need to put a cape over me and walk me off the stage.
I think we do, Joe. But it Jonathan said brainlock, or somebody said brainlock. That's exactly what it was. How do you not step on the bag? That's all you had to.
Step on the bag.
All you had to.
Now just talk to him. Oh my God.
All right, gentlemen.
All right.
Yeah, this has been fun.
This looks like when I was going to see the Atlanta Braves in the mid-1970s when there were 4,000 people there. I called it the Pat Rocket era because Pat Rocket was their shortstop. They couldn't even, they were growing chicken weed in the infield. But this is about as bad. I think what we should do is we should get a collection. We know rich people, like people that work at Axios. I think we should just pass the cap around this morning. Everybody throw in a couple of dollars and we should buy the Pittsburgh Pirates and go over there and maybe get a couple Little League coaches and teach them how to do it, Mika.
Well, Joe and Jonathan Lemire can coach them. Okay, everybody, let's get to the news.
Okay.
A new poll shows nearly 3/4 of Republicans are ready to close the books on the January 6th insurrections. A new Quinnipiac poll shows 74% of Republicans say it's time to move on. That's compared to 84.
Wait, hold on a second. So let's see here. It's May 28th.
Yeah.
This is what? How many months? 4 months? 5 months after the insurrection?
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, Gene Robinson, what if in like January of 2002, Democrats said, you know what? We need to just move past 9/11.
Yeah. Just move past it. Nothing to see here. It's incredible. It's just another example of the sort of fantasy world, dystopian fantasy world that the Republican Party is living in now. And, they don't want to think about that because that was a bad thing for them and a bad thing for their guy, who incited the whole thing, Donald Trump. And so let's just pretend it never happened. It's astonishing.
The tables
were
turned.
For one of our two major political parties to have lost its mind to that extent.
Yeah. If the tables were turned, they'd be telling the truth and also pointing out how this weakens us around the world, especially our national security, a weakness from within that they could promulgate and grow. It's compared to 84% of Democrats and 54% of independents who say the events of that day should never be forgotten. That 74% was likely what was behind a marathon session in the Senate overnight as Republicans stalled a crucial vote on the January 6th commission. Republicans were on the Senate floor until just before 3 this morning, debating an unrelated bill to delay the vote. Now the vote isn't expected until possibly later today. 60 votes are needed for the independent January 6th commission to move forward. So far, only 3 Republicans, 3, have expressed their support. Senator Lisa Murkowski, the only Republican backing the January 6th commission bill, as is, and expressed her disappointment in her colleagues' attempts to block the vote.
It's important that there be a focus on the facts and on the truth, and that may be unsettling, but we need to understand that. We just can't pretend that nothing bad happened or that people just got too excitable. Something bad happened, and it's important to lay that out. I think there's more to be learned. I want to know more, and I want to know, and I don't want to know. I don't want to know, but I need to know.
There's so much to find out, and there's so much misinformation out there that some of the misinformation is easily dismissed, where you have people saying on the Trump right that it was Antifa. It clearly was not Antifa. And none other than Kevin McCarthy screamed and swore at Donald Trump as the insurrection was going down, saying, "This is not Antifa. What do you think? Stupid. These are your people here."
Yeah.
These are your people here. So that lie continues to spread, of course, throughout the Trump right. And there are other lies. It was just really just sort of peaceful demonstrators, nothing to see here. The Ron Johnson claim, oh, there was really nothing to be worried about while police officers were being beaten and brutalized within an inch of their lives. So you have that part of it, too. Mike Allen, what I don't really understand is, you know, you and I both, we've been around the Hill long enough. We know that a lot of times leadership will say, hey, listen, Joe. You know what? Would like to have your vote here. This is a vote of conscience. So you do what you want to do, but would really. That happens a lot of times in votes like this. And certainly Mitch McConnell said that during impeachment. Vote of conscience. You do what you feel like you need to do. What I don't understand is what has changed? Why is Mitch McConnell, based on reporting, all the reporting I've seen, Mitch McConnell's telling Republicans, I need your vote. I need your vote. What is it about this commission that he fears? Why is it that he's telling, instead of just saying vote your conscience like he did on impeachment, why is he now doing everything short of demanding their support?
Joe, it's a little tough to compete with Zapruder baseball. But if you look at this, there's two things going on here. And you know, with Senator McConnell, he's thinking about one thing. He's thinking, how can I rebuild my majority? How am I going to recruit the candidates that I need to get back the Senate majority, looking ahead to next cycles? And so something that to most of the Republicans that you served with and that we've covered over the years, this would seem like a no-brainer. You've pointed out again and again on the show why this commission is needed. But this is one of the ones where they're whipping and pushing as opposed to vote your conscience. And we have a little new reporting on possible fallout from this vote. So Senator Joe Manchin, everybody's trying to read his mind. And he's been very strong in saying that Republicans should be for this commission. We've talked to some Democrats who think that this expected vote by Republicans trying to kill this commission, that's a new wedge the Democrats can use with Manchin to say to him, you're being schooled, you're being played by Republicans. They are not voting, arguing in good faith here. This commission is proof of it. And because of that, you should soften your view on the filibuster, move toward a Senate where Democrats can get their way in a 50-50 Senate, Vice President Harris breaking the tie, instead of right now, where you need 10 Republicans to get something real.
Yeah, and Joe Manchin's going to be hearing a lot of that, but he's been Sherman-esque in saying that he doesn't want to, quote, destroy the government by getting rid of the filibuster. I think that's being a little melodramatic.
Joe,
I don't think. Go ahead.
Yeah, Joe, at the time he said that, he's still holding out hope for some Republican movement. And so if you get no movement past that graphic that you showed, that's where there's an opening to say to Joe Manchin, look, this is a pipe dream that you're going to get Republicans on these big questions. Give it up. Let's pass things that we believe in and need to for our voters.
Yeah, Jonathan Lemire, I heard, I'm trying to remember who said this yesterday. I think it was Senator Bennett said nobody hates Donald Trump more than Mitch McConnell. Hmm. He's probably right there. And so it leads me, obviously, if you looked at what Mitch McConnell said on January the 6th, if you saw what Mitch McConnell said about impeachment, do what you feel like you need to do on impeachment. If you saw what he said after his vote on impeachment, it's very clear he doesn't like Donald Trump. Anything he's doing is not to protect Donald Trump. I'm just wondering, again, for those who are trying to figure out why is the Republican leader in the Senate doing this, I'm just wondering if the whole thing is like, let's get Donald Trump behind us. I don't want to spend the next year, year and a half, figuring out how much Donald Trump was laughing at the White House when he was seeing pictures of cops being beaten up with an American flag. I don't want to be, you know, having to answer for Donald Trump not calling the National Guard in fast enough. Just, you know, Republicans having to answer that question day in and day out as they move through 2021 and into 2022, because this would go into 2022, regardless of what the legislation says, because you know that a lot of people being subpoenaed would fight those subpoenas.
Right. And as much as Senator McConnell may dislike Donald Trump, he likes more the idea of being Senate Majority Leader again. And that's what he's making a calculation here. He's trying to win. He thinks this is best for the Republicans in the Senate. This is the best move for his caucus because of exactly what you said, Joe, that he doesn't want this to turn into a months-long, potentially years-long odyssey with more revelations, keeping January 6th in the news, being more damaging. We have learned, we have seen this just from that date itself, that every time we see a new piece of video, every time we hear from a new witness, including we heard yesterday from the mother of the police officer who was Capitol Police officer who was killed there. It is so heart-wrenching. It's such a difficult day. Those are not headlines that are good for the Republicans who had senators object to the election results. And of course, that violence was incited by the former president. So that's the calculation McConnell has made to try to block this, to try to move forward. We know Speaker Pelosi, as we've been discussing on the show for weeks now, has other options. It could be a select committee, could be the power of the subpoena. But the Republicans' objections to this is what led to last night when Senator Ron Johnson, who, as you mentioned, is the one who said he'd be far more worried if it was Black Lives Matter protesters storming the Capitol as opposed to this pro-Trump riot. He's the one who held up the proceedings, didn't get to votes on things like China and other measures, including January 6th, because he was trying to pull a stunt about the border wall. So the Republicans, again, they're taking their orders from Mitch McConnell, but really it all exists under the shadow of Donald Trump. That's still what they're concerned about because of the grip he has on the party.
As they protect Donald Trump and as we look at these pictures, what confounds me is this event is an assault on our democracy. It hurts us around the world and it hurts us to our core, given what these people did to our Capitol and the threats to our lawmakers and the people that were murdered that day. And many of them tortured, as you can see, with American flags. Now, these are the people that are being protected on Capitol Hill while the FBI is hauling them in and arresting them. And I just wonder why smarter Republicans, perhaps some of the Republicans that are Trump Republicans that still may have a real Republican bone in their body, wouldn't want to get Trump off their back by allowing this commission to go through, because it would not just implicate Donald Trump many times over, but these lawmakers who might have been involved in some way, who may have given tours so people could do some sort of surveillance to see where they could go to try and hang Mike Pence or murder our speaker.
We don't know if that in fact happened.
We don't know, but so wouldn't you want to know?
Wouldn't you
want those people out of your party finally? As Jonathan just mentioned, family members.
Well, let me just say, as we're looking at this, it's so strange growing up a conservative and still being a conservative, but not being a Republican. You look at these mobs, you look at these people breaking the law. This is what we conservatives fought against and railed against since the 1960s.
Law and order.
We railed against chaos. We railed against the breaking down of social order. We railed against the very things that you're seeing in this picture. And here you're seeing, again, the seat of American government, of our constitutional republic, this exceptional nation being bashed and battered about. And so, again, I don't understand why Republicans in the Senate aren't allowed to vote their conscience,
right,
and why they can't get 10. It seems to me, let me say this again, because it's really important to underline, I think it's better that it's a bipartisan, bicameral commission where you have Republicans and Democrats working together. That's better, because if Republicans vote against that, then you will have the House doing it, just like Republicans did with Benghazi. And Democrats in the House, they have the power. They have the subpoena power. They have the power to call witnesses. And they will have the mainstream media following those hearings every single day. It's not like voting against a bipartisan bicameral commission is going to create a news blackout. It's only going, you know, again, I've said this before, if I were Nancy Pelosi, I would have three Republicans members and three Democratic members on the commission, and Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, and maybe one or two others that help forge the compromise deal in the House would be the third. That would be so extraordinarily powerful. And that would be a bipartisan commission, because with Liz Cheney, of course, you have somebody who's more conservative than any of these yahoos that are Trump Republicans. And with Kinzinger, you have a guy that also is a conservative who served.
By definition, they're not Republicans. They're Trump insurrectionists. Well, the insurrectionist party.
Three parties, Republicans, Democrats, Trump insurrectionists.
As Jonathan mentioned, family members and colleagues of fallen officer Brian Sicknick were on Capitol Hill yesterday pleading with Republican senators to support a commission to investigate the attack of the Capitol. Gladys Sicknick, the mother of Officer Sicknick, spoke with reporters about those meetings.
Does it anger you, Mrs. Sicknick, to hear senators who do not support this commission, and what emotions do you feel when you're confronted with that?
This is why I'm here today. Usually I stay in the background, and I couldn't stay quiet anymore.
Can you describe what you said in your letter to the GOP lawmakers to meet with them? Did you call it a slap in the face, or?
Yes, I did. Yes, because they put their lives on the line.
What are you hoping will be on their minds when they vote on this commission?
The country. This was to uphold the Constitution, and right now I don't think they're doing it.
It's a grieving mother there, I believe, with Barbara Comstock, a Capitol Hill officer, and the deceased officer's partner. Grieving, but doing what she believes she has to do, not only for this country, but also for the memory of her son, who served in uniform to protect this country.
She's so plain spoken because it's so obvious.
And
her loss is.
And to protect the very men and women who are now abandoning him. It has to be heartbreaking for her.
Joining us now, former chief of staff to the DCCC, Adrienne Elrod. She recently worked for the Biden campaign and the inaugural committee. Adrienne, it's good to have you back on the show. What can Democrats do at this point to bring more Republicans on board, at least for this?
You know, Mika, I don't know, honestly. I'm baffled by this. You know, I spent 10 years working on the Hill back in a time when Democrats and Republicans worked together, when bipartisanship was the name of the game. It's very constant. And I think you made a really smart point earlier, Mika, when you said this could actually be a chance for Republicans to finally start to break free from Donald Trump, who is holding the Republican Party hostage, who has continued to hold the Republican Party hostage by voting for this bill. I mean, it's just, it's hard to just not think, or it's almost unthinkable to think about the fact that the Senate cannot get a bipartisan bill passed. When you show those images, which, by the way, I hope the media will continue day in and day out to show these images, we can never forget what happened on January 6th. To turn a blind eye to that, and for Mitch McConnell to say, oh, I don't want to deal with how Trump is going to react to this bill if I pass it, if my caucus supports it for the next year and a half. I mean, that's just, you know, he's a coward. He's a chicken. The fact that these guys are not willing to stand up for law enforcement, not willing to stand up for those who lost their line. It's so emotional to watch Officer Sicknick's mother, who clearly is a private citizen, but felt the need to come forward and in the name of her son, in his life, fight for this legislation to get passed. So I say this, I don't know what Democrats can do. What I will say is I think we're probably going to be looking at a select committee. I think that there are still plenty of things that Democrats and the handful of Republicans who may support this can do to try to get to the bottom of what actually happened. But I think we might be looking at a select committee. And sadly, we're not going to be looking at a way for Democrats and Republicans to come together and make a statement that they stand against anything like this happening, what we saw happen on January 6th, from ever happening again.
You know, it really is another, I think, is another low point in just how far the parties have gone apart. And in this case, it's the Republicans who can't even get 10 people together. You know, sit down in good faith. You don't like how the staffing's set up? Okay, well, let's sit down and have talks, right? I mean, that's how it's been done for over 200 years. You sit down, you talk to the other side, you compromise, and I'm sure they'd compromise. But again, right now, Republicans are being leaned on to vote against a bipartisan, bicameral commission that would get to the bottom of this. And again, I just let's listen to Gladys again. Here's a grieving mom. I think it's important. Again, listen to her pleading and talking about why she's on Capitol Hill.
Does it anger you, Mrs. Sibnick, to hear senators who do not support this commission, and what emotions do you feel when you're confronted with that?
This is why I'm here today. Usually I'm stay in the background, and I couldn't stay quiet anymore.
Did you send in a letter to the GOP lawmakers to meet with them? Did you call it a slap in the face, or?
Yes, I did. Yes, because they put their lives on the line.
What are you hoping will be on their minds when they vote on this commission?
The country. This was to uphold the Constitution, and right now I don't think they're doing it.
Gene, a slap in the face for her family, the memory of her dead son, for the officers that were beaten with American flags, the officers whose heads were jammed into the doors, the officers who were punched and kicked, thrown on the floor, begging for their lives. And people like Ron Johnson said nothing happened that day. Others saying that these Trump supporters were QAnon, and then sitting representatives saying, no, mm-hmm. we don't want to know the truth, because, you know, everybody in the Trump insurrectionist party, they have their own different lies. It was QAnon. Kevin McCarthy called that out as a lie on day one. They all said, oh, you know, it's a Ron Johnson lie. Oh, nothing really happened. It was just peaceful. People just have, oh, it's mainly peaceful demonstrators. Nothing to see here. Move along. No, it was quite different. And the American people know that. That's what I don't get the upside Mm-mm. of this political play. I don't yeah. get the upside of it.
I don't get the upside of it either, Joe. But this is, I've been in Washington for a long time, so I've seen a lot of cynical things. This is it's hard to beat this for sheer cynicism that for clearly for nothing but raw political reasons and the desire to regain power. The Senate is refusing to investigate. You know, this is the first time the Capitol was sacked since 1814, right? When the British sacked and burned the Capitol. Nothing like this has happened. Certainly nothing like this had ever happened from a domestic mob, a mob of Americans. And we do need to know how this happened and who was responsible and who was in contact with the leaders of the insurrection. We need to know all of this, and we will find out. But it will be probably a House Select Committee or something like that. The fact that Republicans in the Senate simply will not participate in this is it just takes the cake in terms of pure cynicism, and but that's where we are. I mean, you know, Maya Angelou said, if somebody shows you who they are, you know, believe them. And so I believe this is what the Republican Party is now, and this is what it is falling to. And so we just have to deal with that fact, and it's a horrible fact, but we have to deal with it.
Still ahead on Morning Joe, Russian hackers are at it again, launching another attack targeting U.S. government agencies. Plus, how a piece of far-right Russian propaganda made its way from pro-Kremlin networks to Ted Cruz's Twitter feed. You're watching Morning Joe. We'll be right back.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
33 past the hour, we're following another reported Russian cyber attack against the U.S. government. Microsoft says the Russian-backed group behind the SolarWinds hacked launched a new campaign targeting government agencies, think tanks, and non-governmental organizations. In a blog post yesterday, Microsoft Vice President Tom Burt wrote, the effort targeted about 3,000 email accounts at more than 150 different organizations. And that while organizations in the U.S. received the largest share of attacks, targeted victims span at least 24 countries. And now to this, you might have heard of Republican Senator Ted Cruz sharing this now viral video last week that compared recruitment ads for Russian and military. The Russian video, U.S. militaries, the Russian video showed muscular men doing shirtless push-ups with guns and fighter jets, while the U.S. ad showed a girl talking about growing up with two moms and defending their freedoms at an early age. Senator Cruz tweeted, perhaps a woke, emasculated military is not the best idea. But according to Insider, experts say the video is actually a far-right Russian propaganda. It appears to have originated from an ally of Russian President Vladimir Putin and then quickly made its way to 4chan and other white supremacist forums. Joining us now is senior reporter at Insider, Tom Porter. Tom, what more can you tell us about this story?
So I was curious to see this on Ted Cruz's Twitter feed last week. And I was, obviously it's Russian propaganda. It supports the core narratives of the Russian state, that Russia is somehow in a position of strength relative to the United States. And I wanted to go back and see if we could actually concretely link this video to pro-Kremlin networks. So I spoke to a brilliant guy at the Center for the Analysis of the Radical Right here in the UK, a guy called Alexander Ross. And over the course of several days, I managed to trace this video team back to a network of pro-Kremlin far-right commentators and news outlets in Europe. And from this network, it kind of spreads into US far right through 4chan. There's a TikTok made out of it. You'll see the TikTok symbol in the bottom right of the Cruz video. And it then leaps onto Telegram. It's shared by some violent anti-US, white supremacist forums on Telegram. And it makes the leap onto Twitter, where it's shared by Ted Cruz.
Hey, Tom, it's Jonathan Lemire. Wanted to ask you, this sort of a truism about Russia, that very little happens there. without at least a nod and a wink from the Kremlin itself, from Vladimir Putin, and giving them some deniability, though, if it's not a, say, GRU run operation. What is your sense? What is your reporting telling you about how much knowledge, if any, the Kremlin may have had on this, but also just speak more broadly about some of these hacker, Russia-based hack organizations that we have seen attack the U.S., attack the West? How much of them are actually sanctioned officially or unofficially by the Kremlin?
So, I mean, with regards specifically to the Cruz video, I mean, this is propaganda that's fomented by the Russian state, by Russian state media. I couldn't find anything kind of concretely linking it to the GRU or any Russian state actors, but it comes out of the climate of propaganda that Russia pushes and propagates. I mean, it's very much part of this campaign, which goes back a long time now, of seeking to portray the US and the open society that the US has as, in effect, kind of weakening the US. It's a kind of core narrative for the Kremlinists. And they portray themselves as having this traditionalist society. With respect to the hacks, I mean, it's, you know, Russia's campaign is conducted on several levels. Yes, there's the propaganda campaign, which feeds into, in some ways, mainstream Republican propaganda in the United States. And there's also the hacking. And my understanding is that there are some pretty clear linkages between the hacking and Russian intelligence, specifically the GRU.
All right, insiders, Tom Porter, thank you very much for your reporting. We appreciate it. And coming up, pushback against a new law in Florida targeting social media companies. Our next guest says it's all about pleasing the MAGA crowd. Morning Joe is coming right back.
Each year, the International Rescue Committee's Emergency Watchlist report assesses the 20 countries at greatest risk of new or worsening humanitarian emergencies. These countries are home to only 10.6% of the world's population, but carry a disproportionate burden of global humanitarian crisis. The civil war in Sudan has left over 24 million in need of humanitarian aid, while armed conflicts and natural disasters have displaced 1.26 million people in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And Gaza has become the deadliest place for civilians in the world. Donations help the IRC provide families affected by humanitarian crises with emergency supplies in the aftermath of a crisis and with the resources they need to recover and rebuild their lives for the long term. Just $14 can provide a temporary shelter for a displaced family, and $72 can provide 2 months' worth of emergency food for a child. Donate today by visiting rescue.org/rebuild.
Past the hour, earlier in the week, we told you about Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signing into law a bill that fines social media platforms for banning the accounts of people running for office. DeSantis said the law takes on Silicon Valley elites that censor conservative views. Joining us now, State Attorney for Palm Beach County, Dave Ehrenberg. Dave, what's the law actually doing, and who does it really target?
Good morning, Mika. This law is performance art. It's a show for the MAGA audience, and it's so blatantly unconstitutional that Harvard Law School may want to take away DeSantis' degree because he knows better. He knows this Transparency and Technology Act is just purely political, but he wants to inherit the MAGA base for a run for president in 2024. The courts are going to strike this down, but when they do, he'll blame liberal activist judges, even though most of them will probably be appointed by Republicans. And at the same time, he gets to bash Silicon Valley. So this is a twofer for him. He can bash judges in Silicon Valley. It's like a right-wing daily double. What this is about is about forcing private social media companies to broadcast the speech of candidates, regardless of how untrue that speech is. And the Supreme Court has made it clear that the First Amendment prevents government from forcing private companies to broadcast someone else's speech. It's also a violation of federal law, the Communications Decency Act. Now, social media companies do need to do better. They need to monitor the hate speech and all the threats that go on online. But this law would make it harder for them to do so because it prevents them from banning candidates who engage in race baiting and lies and hate. It even bans sites from doing those innocuous fact checks that they do, like Twitter did below Donald Trump's tweets before he was banned. And if you really want to know how bogus this law is, just see that it exempts companies that have large theme parks, which shows that DeSantis is actually just as scared of Mickey Mouse than he is of Donald Trump. You know, it's amazing that the people who decry socialism all the time keep enacting these socialist type laws, or maybe this is crony capitalism, but either way, it's unconstitutional.
Well, it's big government, whatever you call it. And Mike Allen, obviously, even though Dave Ehrenberg believes it's going to be ruled unconstitutional, and many other people do as well. Big tech, as you all report just about every day, is a target of both sides, but especially the MAGA crowd. So even if it's overruled, this is a big political win likely for Ron DeSantis, isn't it?
No, that's right. He's looking ahead to running for president himself, like buzz about him being vice president if President Trump were to run again. Like, this, just the fight is a win for him. He doesn't need the law. The court fight is a win for him. And Joe's, I talked to budding Senate candidates around the country. They're thinking about what they're going to be talking about in 2022. I'm told this is a very powerful issue, that it's very resonant on the stand. I think we're going to hear a lot of it in the campaigns coming up.
All right. And Joe, I'm just curious. Ron DeSantis, I guess in a way, by doing this, is another person banking on Trump. Mm-hmm. Instead of getting him off their back. I mean, they are sitting here waiting to see if he's going to run for president again. It just seems to me that there's such clear choices that they could make. And then, by the way, once again, return to their Republican roots.
Well, I don't think Ron DeSantis wants Donald Trump to get off his back. I think he wants to stand on Donald Trump's shoulders because he's thinking he's going to be the next Republican nominee. And Dave Ehrenberg, you're a Florida politician. The talk has been rampant around, all over the state of Florida, that Ron DeSantis, that Rick Scott, you fill in the blank, one Republican after another from the state of Florida is planning on running for president. But right now, it's DeSantis, clearly, who is, if you look at these early polls, is the favorite of a lot of Republicans across the nation.
Yeah, and these guys are on a collision course, Joe. DeSantis and Scott are not big fans of each other. And so we'll see how that plays out. Also, you have Marco Rubio, who may want to run for president. So you could have three Floridians. But DeSantis is the hot guy in the Republican Party right now, and he has done everything he can to try to inherit this MAGA base. It's not just passing these unconstitutional laws that prevent social media companies from banning right-wing candidates, regardless of what they say. It's also purchasing a million doses of the drug hydroxychloroquine when the former president touted it as a miracle cure for COVID. So now the state of Florida is stuck with a million doses of a drug no hospital wants. But I guess, when there's a malaria outbreak, we'll be ready. No other states passed this kind of law. Their legislatures have passed it, but other governors have vetoed it, this social media law, but not DeSantis. He's waving this around as something that he should be proud of. But in reality, he knows that it's unconstitutional. He's not stupid, but he's looking at 2024. And that's why he's hoping, I think, deep down, that Trump does get indicted and goes away, because that's the only way he can run for president next cycle.
Well, I'm just a dumb country lawyer, poor guy. I could only afford to go to state schools like Alabama and Florida. So maybe I'm just not as smart as those Harvard boys or those Yale boys like DeSantis. They're all it's funny. All these populists, they're all and all these people doing really stupid things legally that even I know were unconstitutional. they're all Harvard boys. I know, Dave, you're a Harvard boy too. So I'm going to give you a pass because you don't come on here and talk about unconstitutional things. But I gotta say, I mean, Adrian, you're from Arkansas. I'm from every state across the deep South. Isn't it rich that like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and Ron DeSantis, they all went to Harvard or Yale or Stanford or Princeton, you know, they're eating in supper clubs or dinner clubs or whatever those elite kids call it these days. And playing this populist card and really doing unbelievably stupid things that are like unconstitutional, that make no sense. And it's, talk about the irony. This is the future of American populism? I don't think so.
Yeah, this is like a reality TV show in real life. I mean, again, it's hilarious to watch, Joe, because these guys are so held hostage by Trump and whatever decision he decides to make, whether or not he's going to run again. And there's this long line of, you know, 15 or 20 guys just waiting in the wings, maybe a couple women in there, too, just to see what he does. But I think the bottom line is, what these guys don't realize is, you know, not everyone is going to be able to get in there and just replicate what Trump has done. I don't think that Ron DeSantis would be able to hold on to the Republican Party the way that Trump was able to. At least, you know, I hope that somebody like Donald Trump is a once in a lifetime or once every 100 years type of president. But yeah, I mean, look, I'm an SEC girl, so I do kind of have to laugh a little bit at some of these Ivy, Roll Tide, Go Hogs, is some of these Ivy Leaguers who are making some of these really, really ridiculous decisions. They're not governing. They're simply playing to a base.
It is government by gesture time and time again.
State Attorney for Palm Beach County, Dave Ehrenberg, thank you so much. And Mike Allen, thank you as well. Have a great weekend, guys. Coming up, Senate Democrats respond to the latest infrastructure counteroffer by the Republicans. Plus, the D.C. cicadas strike on Capitol Hill.
Oh, my God. This is horrible.
Oh my God. We're back. Ew. In just a moment.
Come on. Can nobody tell him what's happening?
From Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, he created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.